Awesome. Thank you. Good morning. I'll call this regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. It is about 10 o'clock on April 14th, Wednesday. We're gathered in the 12th floor of the State Capitol in the Public Service Commission hearing room for our regularly scheduled meeting. I'm Commissioner Julie Fedorchak. Also present are Commissioner Randy Crispin and Commissioner Brian Crosius, so we have a quorum. I don't have any opening comments that immediately come to mind. Commissioner Crispin, do you have any you'd like to talk about?
I do not have opening comments, except I will ask, I don't know if it was, that the JF1 on the consent calendar, if we could move that to the regular calendar, please.
Absolutely. It's a good idea. Do you have any problem with that, Commissioner Crosius?
I do not.
All right. So we will do that. I'll pull that one over and we'll lead off with that one when the time comes. All right. Commissioner Crosius, any opening comments for you?
No opening comments.
All right. Then we have, let's see, I need to recount now. I think two items on consent. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Excellent. Thank you, Steve. Moving into the regular agenda, I now have one item on the regular agenda. So we'll go into that. That was formerly consent, JF1. Now we'll discuss it. This is a tree and shrub mitigation plan. I move the commission approve the tree and shrub mitigation plan filed on March 23rd, 2021 in Northern Divide Wind, LLC, 200 megawatt Northern Divide Wind Energy Center, Burke siting application, case number PU19-376, and the Northern Divide Wind Transmission Line, Burke and Montrail siting application, case number PU19-377.
Second.
Yeah. Brian seconded. Thank you. So staff reviewed this tree and shrub mitigation plan, and it calls for replacing of a significant number of trees that were impacted during construction. I think 12,000 plus trees and shrubs within the project construction easement. So they are replacing them on well, that's how many that they tend to replace with. They found 5,000 trees and shrubs impacted during construction. So they're replacing on a 2-to-1 basis, and they have filed a plan with our office for completing that and meeting the requirements of the plan and the follow-up required there. So staff has gone through their plan and recommends approval. The plan does call for plantings taking place in mid-May of this year, inspected annually in September for two consecutive years after planting. So I think, if I understand correctly, Commissioner Crispin, you have some thoughts on the timing of this, and I want to turn over to you for whatever comments you'd like to make on that regard.
Yeah, to be clear, I think the plan is well devised and everything. It's just a weather thing, and I guess I'm partially still wearing the rancher's hat, because kind of the same time that people plan and plant trees is the same time that people plan and take cattle out to pasture. And I know of a lot of people who are considering selling large parts of their herds right now in order to save what little grass it looks like there's going to be for the remainder. And it could be that you do that and it starts raining and it ends up being a great year. But at some point you have to make a decision, and I'm just wondering whether we should build in here somehow. I don't have language prepared for it. It was kind of a late thought, and I apologize for that, but whether we should at least give them the option of extending their plans out a year. It just looks like the possibility of a year where you could plant a bunch of trees for nothing.
I think that's a good idea. I'm not sure the mechanism for making that happen, if it's if we the order doesn't say anything about the timing. It just says the move the commission approved the tree and shrub mitigation plan. Could we add a line to the motion allowing them an extension of 1 year on the timing outlined in the plan?
What if we did, may?
Sure.
I would propose this. How about if we pass this, but then as a portfolio holder, if you could instruct staff to contact them and if they would like to reconsider and potentially push it out a year, that maybe staff could make it known to them that there'd be the likelihood that we would reconsider this at the next meeting and
do it again
and do that maybe.
I mean, that would be certainly fine. We'd have to bring it up again. I if it's possible to find a way to just provide them that discretion today, I think that might be worthwhile.
I wonder if we had something to the effect of if we can add this in if procedurally, I think is what you're getting at, if we can do that now.
Right.
The plantings will take place in Midway, comma, weather permitting, or at a time agreed upon by the commission. I don't think even with, it would take a significant amount of rain between now and mid-May to even make tree planting feasible. There's the potential for fall plantings. They can be very successful. But again, that takes a lot of moisture between now and then as well, and typically we're dry into the fall. But anyway, some type of flex or, you know, weather permitting or at a time more conducive, where conditions are more conducive to tree survival.
How about this proposal? What if we didn't take action on this? And we could even have a special meeting. Like, if they're really determined and maybe have already bought the trees, for some reason it has to go through, we can have a special meeting, too, so it doesn't have to delay 2 weeks. I just feel like if we approve this, we're kind of forcing them to do it, doesn't it?
It would actually extend 3 weeks, because our next commission meeting is 3 weeks from today, I believe.
Madam Chair, could I make a suggestion?
Sure, please do.
If you simply put a line in allowing discretion either to the portfolio holder or to staff to delay it 1 year if they determine that weather conditions are not favorable.
I was just kind of sketching out an addition to the motion. I move the commission approve the tree and shrub mitigation plan filed on March 23rd, 2021, and allow a one-year extension based on drought conditions in Northern Divide wind, blah, blah, blah. Jack or Adam, do you guys want to chime in at all?
We need some procedural direction.
So your proposal would be to add kind of an out there that would read that it would be conditional. You would offer them an option for a 1 year extension based on drought conditions.
Correct.
I think we could we do that, John? Do you see a problem with that?
I apologize. I'm just walking into this, but we would be able to do an extension for any sort of contractual services or for obligations as well under the order, if that's what you're expressing an interest in.
Yeah, can we just incorporate that into the motion, I guess, for procedure today?
We would be able to move it with that amendment. This is a provision in the order. Is that correct? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you could motion to approve with that addition to that order. If you'd like, and we would subsequently do that.
Do I procedurally rescind the original motion, or do we just...
I think you could just amend the original motion and add that to it.
Okay. So then for the record, I would amend my original motion to state, I move the commission approve the tree and shrub mitigation plan filed on March 23rd, 2021, and allow a one-year extension based on drought conditions in Northern Divide Wind LLC, 200 megawatt Northern Divide Wind Energy Center, Burke, siting application case number PU-19-376, and a Northern Divide Wind LLC 345 kV transmission line, Burke and Montrail, siting application case number PU-19-377.
Second.
We have a motion to amend the original motion and a second. Is there any further discussion on the amendment?
Welcome to production agriculture. Facing decisions on the weather.
It's a good idea to extend it. I was putting posts in on this past weekend and literally went 24 inches before I hit any type of moisture. It's tough out there.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, I will call the vote on the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The amendment's approved. Now we'll go back to the original motion.
The amended?
The amended motion. Okay. Is there any further discussion on the amended motion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Great.
Amended motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve, and everybody. Thanks, Randy, for bringing that to the forefront. It's a good idea. And that concludes my portfolio. It's your turn, Randy.
Okay, and I have kind of a boatload here. In the first one, I move the commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation in Dactel Communications, LLC, designated eligible carrier expansion, application case number PU-21-41.
Second.
And I will say there are seven of these, and they're different companies. The first one and the last one kind of differ from the middle five, but I only intend to point out the differences on the last six, and so unless someone asks a question or something. So most of the concern here is going to be discussed with this first one rather than just repeating some of the same things over and over. So on January 21st, Dactel filed an application for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier for the purpose of receiving Federal Communication Commission Rural Digital Opportunity Fund. And after this, I'll be referring to that as RDOF funding in specified census blocks in rural areas of the state. The FCC requires that Dactel be designated as an ETC by June 7th. Dactel also, and this is one thing that separates this from most of the rest, Dactel also in the same application seeks designation as an ETC for the purpose of receiving federal universal for service support for low-income consumers in some additional areas. Such designation is also known as lifeline-only ETC designation. So on February 17th, we issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, providing until March 29th for comments and requests for hearing. There were no comments or requests for hearing received. The notice identified the following issues to be considered in both matters. Number one is the applicant qualified for designation as an ETC? Number two is, what ETC universal service support area should be designated? And number three is the designation of the applicant as an ETC in the public interest. So first on the RDOF part of it, to receive the RDOF funding, Dactel must offer commercially at least one voice and one broadband service at speeds of at least 1 gigabit per second. They propose to provide the service required for RDOF funding by constructing fiber optic network. Dactel's qualified for designation as an ETC. We know that from working with them in the past. And the FCC has specified the geographic RDOF areas that will receive funding, so that's a given. So the provision of adequate essential and non-essential telecommunication service in these exchanges will be facilitated and supported by the full current technical and financial capabilities of Dactel, and it is in the public interest that they be designated as an ETC. For the lifeline part of it, they are qualified for designation as an ETC. support for low-income consumers. The geographic area means the company's study area in this case, and the provision of adequate essential and non-essential telecommunications service in these exchanges will be facilitated and supported by the full technical and financial capabilities of Dactel. So again, it is in the public interest that they be designated as an ETC. Dactel kind of serves that area around Jamestown, but originally not technically the city of Jamestown. Their home office is up in Carrington. But some years ago, they did do an overbuild, and they now serve very much of Jamestown. And from there, it goes like out east to kind of the Spiritwood area, and then to the northwest up to Pingree. That's the area of this, of the RDOF area that I was just laying out. Their regular service area, of course, is much larger. Specifically, this company, DCT is the subsidiary that did that successful overbuild of Jamestown. And I think I mentioned the central office is in Carrington. And just two things that really specific with Dactel that I want to point out while we're talking about them. Them and Dickey Rural were the first in the nation to have their full fiber-to-the-home build-out projects done. And they are governed by their board of directors, one of whom is Representative Craig Hedlund, who is joining us today. And when I was elected to a telecommunications, to the West River Telecommunications Board, Craig was then the chairman of NDATC, which has now become the Broadband Association in North Dakota, and welcomed me in and helped teach me the ropes, and I'm always grateful for that. And it's a fine company, and I think both their lifeline support and especially this RDOF funding in this and the future cases. These are some of those rural areas that are not served by cooperatives that have been able to do the build-outs that the co-ops have done. And with this RDOF funding, we're going to get some more folks out there served with good modern telecommunications. In this case, the RDOF portion is expected to reach about 66 locations, and it's $532,000. Thanks, Craig, for your work at Dakota Central.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Thanks, Randy, for your work on this one and on all the rest. This is a really, really big deal for North Dakota, reaching the broadband out to some of these most rural areas in our state. And it's a significant investment by the federal government. I think it's upwards of $20 billion that they're going to be granting in RDOF funding throughout the country. And to bring about high-speed access, gigabyte access, to the most rural parts of the country. So I think that our telecommunication providers have really stepped up with good plans to make use of these funds and to deliver them to the people in these rural areas. And I think it's going to, you know, be another step to providing opportunities for folks to live and work wherever they so desire in North Dakota, even some of our most rural areas, and still be connected to the world through their high-speed internet connections. So our rural telcos are such a huge advantage for our rural communities and do so much to keep us connected, and we have some of the best connectivity any place in the country. So that's because of BAND and all of its members. So we're really, really fortunate by the quality of our rural telcos in North Dakota.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Yeah, the next one, I move the commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation in MLGC LLC, designated eligible carrier expansion, application case number PU-21-50. So for the record, MLGC is a combination of the old Moore and Liberty telephone and Griggs County telephone. Those, I think they still maintain both of the headquarters buildings, one in Enderlin and one in Cooperstown. McHenry and Kindred would be a couple of the other communities you might be most familiar with. This RDOF funding is going to go to some census blocks, kind of if you think of the Cass County communities of like Leonard and Kindred and Walcott and Comstock, and then reaching up toward Fargo. That's where these census blocks are. Two of these are kind of working together, so they combine for three of the motions. So I'll get into the numbers of consumers for this later because they're combined. But really the only difference in this is, from what I had said before, Dakota Central had filed their application on January 21st, and this was January 28th, a week later, but everything else followed exactly.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Randy, just one question I have when I look at these maps of the squares. The places that are not covered by the squares, do we assume they already have service?
No, I would assume that they probably don't, and there might not be anyone living there.
Okay. And these are mostly fixed wireless type systems, correct? So it's not like fiber in the ground to all of these locations.
A lot of these are. This, the Dactel was fiber in the ground. This is fiber in the ground. Most of these are
fiber in the ground
buildouts. Yep.
Not the fixed wireless.
Correct.
Oh, I thought I was reading fixed wireless. Okay.
Is there any further discussion?
So, well, one more question then. How do they get through those spots? Like they just skip them? They're building fiber in the ground.
Well, you know, it's a mystery how they come up with these in the FCC auction. But I always presume that a lot of those don't have anyone there or they'd have been included.
Right.
And so there's not a location to serve. They probably build across them.
Okay.
Isn't it true that quite often the fiber is laid in the right-of-way next to a roadway and these sections may not have anything more than a township trail, if you will, or line trail?
Actually, most of the companies are trying to stay out of the right-of-way and in the private land because every time the road does something, then they have to relocate it. So they're trying to get it on private land when they can. But
I don't think
for the most part, sort of like the reapportionment of the legislature or something, they deal in census blocks where there's someone to serve. And so why some of these are left, it also could be that, I don't know, for some, it's the FCC. I really don't know why.
So it's just where there's customers, not necessarily where the actual fiber is going to exist.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to hear more on the FCC logic if you would indulge us.
Let's do that.
I have fiber adjacent to the ranch, but it's in the right of way. So it seems where most of it is, at least out west, but maybe I just haven't paid that much attention to it.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
RC3, I move the commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation and Polar Telecom Incorporated designated eligible carrier expansion application case number PU-21-51.
Second.
So Park River is a co-op that's more in the northeast part of the state. Their central office is in, did I say Park River is? Polar is the telecom up there. Their central office is in Park River. These areas actually are scattered much farther. They go from way down by Mayville all the way up to Minto, scattered around. And this is the other company that's kind of working with MLGC, so I'll have a combined numbers in the next one. But this would be another fiber case.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And when I say it's fiber, I mean it's my understanding that it's primarily or entirely fiber. I guess I wouldn't, from my own company days, if there was something that was almost unreachable, you know, I'm not saying that they wouldn't ever build an occasional alternative solution mm-hmm. into it. So RC4, I move the commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation and Halstead Telephone Company designated eligible carrier expansion application, case number PU-21-55.
Second.
So Halstead is mostly a Minnesota company, but they do serve the Hillsboro area. And these census blocks are around Thompson and Reynolds and maybe some more just a little closer down on the north side of Fargo. And again, the statistics that I have on these, I don't know why this one is combined with Polar and MLGC, but that's what I got from FCC. Between the three, or however they're combined, it's over 1,200 locations and over $9 million.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Move the commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation and reservation telephone cooperative designated eligible carrier expansion application case number -PU-21-78.
Second.
So here we jump over to the opposite end of the state. Reservations, central offices, and partial. Just a distinction to point out, those last few, the applications had come in on January 28th. This one didn't come in until February 3rd, but it still got filed. The notice got filed the same day, and the timing for opportunities for hearing were also till March 29th. These areas are, you know, along the Montana border over there by Fairview. There's 73 locations, and it's $337,000.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation in Red River Rural Telephone Association designated eligible carrier expansion application, case number PU-21-88.
Second.
This one has all different dates. They filed a little bit later on February 17th, so we actually approved the notice on March 3rd, and people had until the 12th, but again, no comments or any objections came in. The Red River's central office is at Abercrombie. These areas it's only three locations and about $15,000. It's in that area just north of Wahpeton.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Cable 1 VOIP LLC, designated eligible carrier, case application, case number PU-21-123.
Second.
This one's kind of has some distinctions, but it's still about RDOF. On March 30th, Cable One filed an application for designation for the purpose of receiving the RDOF funding in census blocks of North Dakota. The FCC requires that Cable One again be designated by June 7th. They also, as was the case with Dakota Central, seek designation as an ETC for purpose of receiving the universal service support for lifeline for low income consumers to provide the lifeline services using a combination of their own facilities and the facilities of others. So that also is a distinction that they don't build out all their own fiber necessarily. The same things to be considered here. Is the applicant qualified for designation as an ETC? What universal support area should be designated? And is the designation of the applicant as an ETC in the public interest? This is just the notice of opportunity. So persons are invited to comment on the application in writing. If people have a desire a hearing, they must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. The comments and requests for hearings must be received by May 24th. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a formal hearing, as we did those previous six. Now,
we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And that concludes my portfolio.
Thank you, Commissioner Crisman. And that is the end of our regular agenda. A couple announcements here. We have an interesting day today. This afternoon we have an informal hearing at 1:30 with the Rugby Wind Farm. They're asking for an extension on their light mitigating technology. And so they are going to be making their pitch to us at 1:30. And at 3 o'clock we have a work session on the settlement that was filed on Friday with the MDU natural gas rate increase request. And a settlement that all the parties have agreed, signed on to. So we'll talk about that at 3. And then on Friday, we have a formal hearing with on the case Nodak Electric Cooperative versus Ottertail Power. Those are always interesting discussions and hearings. And then next week, Thursday, we have the continuance of the formal hearing on Keith and Deanne Kessler versus Minnesota Power. I should also note that I think we need to add to the calendar next week the Lignite Energy Council's annual meeting. I would assume that all of us will be attending portions of that as we are able. So we might want to get those dates added to our calendar. And with that, I think that is the end of the announcements. We'll take a brief recess with questions, followed by a short break if we need it, and the admin portion of the meeting.